Howdy.
God has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. Colossians 1, 13 and 14. I love a good story. Marvel movies, definitely a favorite. Decades of stories being piled one on top of another. Trilogies that complete a story. Extended series. I am excited that after 9 years, I finally get to see the ending of Stranger Things. Any good story that lasts a long time just pulls me in. Even How I Met Your Mother had me as a sucker. I may be okay at telling stories in a sermon that I've prepped in advance, but I wish I were better at telling stories off the cuff. And one of the things I find exciting about entering a story, I mean, really entering it, is that when you focus long enough on a character, something in you begins to pull for them. Even the worst ones, the longer that you pay attention to them, the more you focus on them, the more likely you are to be rooting for them, even the ones you would never trust to even water your plants. You spend enough time with any character and your heart starts whispering, come on, maybe this is the moment that they turn it around. No matter how flawed, how broken, how wildly unqualified they are to be any sort of hero, once you pay attention, you start wanting redemption for them. And that's how it is with this man named Dismas. I mean, what a name, right? He's either a precious metal or someone who definitely owes you money. He's not a great character. If you're choosing teams, you wouldn't pick him. If you were casting him in a movie, he'd be somewhere toward the end as thug number 3 who gets knocked out before the opening credits even finished rolling. Whatever shady things he's done in his life, they're not the sort of things that you're going to brag about at Thanksgiving dinner. And yet, the longer we start watching the thug, the criminal, paying attention to him, something in us can't help but hope for him to make something of himself. Even though his story seems headed toward disaster, even though nothing good seems likely to come of it, even though he is corrupt, compromised, and honestly undeserving, something in us keeps whispering, maybe there's still a chance. Maybe grace will find him. Because when you enter a story deeply enough, redemption stops being a plot twist and starts becoming a longing inside the audience. And if we're honest, we want redemption too. Not just for the criminal, but for ourselves. And it's not really about wanting to be in the kingdom of God, though. It's expecting forgiveness to be in our own dark world, on our terms, to redeem us without needing to change anything. Isn't that the thing about people? We love the grace, but we hate dwelling in the new kingdom. Colossians 1, 15 through 16. Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created. All things were created through him and for him. And maybe that's the strangest twist of all. We don't ever actually want the perfect hero. Not really. We want the one who limps the way that we limp. We want the one who panics at the wrong moments. We want the one who snaps at the wrong people. We want the one who breaks promises and gets caught, because deep down, we know that we would have gotten caught too. It's like when the flawless hero walks onto the stage, and we know how perfect he is, and we think, well, that must be exhausting being that perfect all the time. We hate it when the girl chooses the good guy. We make up in our heads reasons why he deserves to be ignored and rejected. But then the camera cuts to the side character who's sweating, confused, and morally questionable. And suddenly we're like, there he is. That's my guy. The one who clearly has nothing redeeming about him and makes things worse, but hey, at least he's honest. Dismas is that guy. A man who is something of a mystery, except we know he deserves to be punished as a criminal, because he is one. And Jesus, well, He's Jesus. Does anyone really want to root for the perfect person? Come on. Does anyone really want to pay attention to Jesus as an actual human being? As someone to connect with on a personal level? Yes, be our Savior, but don't be our buddy. Colossians keeps shouting us, you don't understand. Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn. That's the guy to be like. Follow him. But let's be honest. When Paul says, in him all things hold together, most of us hear it kind of like a refrigerator magnet or one of those stitched pillows at Hobby Lobby, the Jesus store. It doesn't really quite hit. It doesn't really mean anything. It just looks pretty. And we're far more aware of how we're coming apart. And that's what it is that we keep looking for in others. So we gravitate toward the characters who are coming apart as well. The more we watch Jesus, the more we admire him. But the more we watch Dismas, the more we understand him. And 9 times out of 10, the person you understand is the one you root for. He gives us a place to hide our hope. If that guy could be saved, then maybe someone like me could too. Colossians 1:17-18. Jesus is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. But here's our tension. Colossians insists that Jesus is the one who holds reality itself together, yet we keep trying to rewrite the story. We complain when stories turn out exactly the way that they were designed. We say, well, I didn't want that to happen, as if the universe somehow owed us a gentler episode. We watch 9 episodes of a sitcom. We see 2 characters fall in love exactly as the writer set up in episode 1. And then when they end up together at the end, we roll our eyes and say, well, that was a terrible ending. We want our own version that makes us feel better about ourselves, our own arc, our own ending. When we see the ones who are corrupt and terrible, who continue to fall down a moral decline, and they lose in the end, there's still a part of us that's still a little bit upset. But you see, that's exactly what happens with the man that we keep trailing through the shadows, Dismas. He did what we do. He ignored what God had designed people to do. He took the storyline built on God's design and said, no thanks, I'll improvise. Steal, maim, kill. It makes a bit more sense to me. I need to look out for number 1. Me first. But even when we try to scribble all over the script and ruin the original story, the author does not abandon the story. The author does not abandon us. Dismas doesn't know it yet. But as much as he has tried to escape a story that God would have originally wanted for him, God is about to sweep him up into a redemption that he never could have imagined. For in Jesus, all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, making peace by the blood of his cross. Colossians 1:19-20. And this is where the whole thing cuts open. If God's story only worked when characters behaved properly and followed the right person, we wouldn't have a story, we'd have a pamphlet. A very, very short pamphlet. If the story only worked out because everyone and everything had done everything exactly right, there would be no story at all. Because the fullness of God, it doesn't show up in the scenes where everything is tidy and perfectly done. It shows up right when the story derails spectacularly. Look at the cast around Jesus. Disciples who blurt out the wrong answer at the wrong time. Followers who can't stay awake long enough through a prayer meeting. Betrayer who thinks the perfect moment to hand Jesus over is the exact moment when Jesus has finally revealed who he really is. if this were a movie, the same audience that was excited to see all of those characters mess up and ruin things would then be yelling, "What are you doing?" He was getting to the good part. He was so close to making everything finally work. And then it gets worse. As Jesus is betrayed, as his story is ruined by the characters we were originally excited to see, the ones whose character flaws were just like ours, even while we didn't want to admit it, two thieves appear on the hill with Jesus, about to be executed for crimes that they really did commit. As much as we look at those pictures time and time again, let's be clear, these are not two cute little characters on either side. This isn't Statler and Waldorf from The Muppets heckling Jesus from some pretend balcony. These were not charming old men making snarky commentary. These were hardened criminals, genuinely dangerous, genuinely guilty. And that's the point. These were not actors sitting around the casting table discussing who was going to play each part, making an amazing story that would win the Academy Award. These were people taking the beauty of God's world and destroying it, betraying it, ruining it. As much as we look back and find it fascinating and lovely, the ones who lived it had no loveliness at all. But the fullness of God means that while their sinful rebellion was never how it should have been, God would still step into the ruined story and find a way to redeem it. God says, "You broke the narrative, you mangled the plot, you took the only perfect character and threw him away for the others, but I'm still going to set it right." And how does he do it? By letting the only sinless character in the narrative carry the consequences of everyone else's improvisation, being blamed for things that he didn't do while others lived according to the lie. So two others, who were criminals, were led away to be put to death with him. One of the criminals began to mock him, but the other rebuked him, saying, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he said to him, "Today, you will be with me in paradise." And that's what we find with the two thieves, who were given names in early Christian tradition of Gestas and Dismas. Because Gestas was the one who mocks Jesus, and Dismas is the one who turns to him. And everything in the story, all of Colossians' cosmic claims, the ones that we hear but we keep glazing over every time we get to that passage, all the brokenness and improvisation and rebellion that we keep using to knock away everything God has done, suddenly collapses into a single moment. Because the man whose resume is nothing but failure puts all his hope in the one whose resume is nothing but faithfulness. The one who deserves nothing asks for everything. He asks for paradise. He asks for all of it. And Jesus gives it to him. See, that's the scandal of grace. This is not how the story would normally make sense. But you see, that's the punchline. That's the upside-down kingdom that Paul keeps shouting about in Colossians, is that the worst character gets the keys to the kingdom. The worst choice is the one who gets it all. And that's the only reason we have life everlasting. Because that's us. We do not deserve paradise. We did not choose the right path. We did not cling to the right storyline. We threw away the only one who ever followed it perfectly because we thought we saw a timeline that just looked a lot more fun. And yet, by his mercy, he still hands us the kingdom today. Holding the keys does not mean that we earned them. We didn't create a story that brought joy and beauty to God's kingdom. But we still have the keys anyway. Because God let his son suffer and earn the keys for us. So here is my hope. My plea, if you will, as you realize that this morning I am once again giving you the keys to the kingdom. My hope is that we stop trying to rewrite the story to fit what we want it to be. That we stop insisting on the versions that flatter us and our biases. That we stop returning to paths of corruption, self-protection, and self-creation. Is that as we hold the keys that we never deserved, we have the time now to say more than Dismas ever did. Lord, change me. Help me understand why I chose what was wrong. Before I enter your kingdom, I will never deserve it. But let me follow you now. Because as much as we look at Dismas and we know that at that moment his story is coming to an end, we also know that that is the moment that led into eternity. So maybe that moment for us, though, the moment where we surrender, where we look at everything that we have done and the consequences of it all, as we cry in the ruins of what we've done and we turn to the firstborn of all creation, maybe that becomes the chapter in our lives that stands for all of eternity. Maybe that's the chapter that we present to others as our testimony. And maybe that's the chapter where the author himself rewrites our own ending forever. So today, here are the keys. My hope is that you receive them from the one who loved you enough to give himself. Thanks be to God.